Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yes, guys, welcome back to another episode of Teams Like Brighton. Now, guys, if you're listening just on the audio, you'll probably hear a little bit of audio interference. Don't worry about that. All can be explained if you're watching. All of that can be explained. If you're watching this on YouTube, you will see that we're at a familiar place right now. All will be revealed later. Basically, Richie and I had a little bit of a kickabout. Unfortunately, Deserve did not see our talents, fortunately. But look, what a game against City. We'll talk about that later on in the episode. And we'll be looking ahead to the Villa, where we have absolutely nothing to play for and Villa have got everything to play for. So it'll be in for a cracking match, won't it, Richie?
I think it will, Tom.
Yeah, it will. Right, we're going to go back to where we usually do our podcast and we'll take it from there.
Yes, guys. Right, we're back where we usually are, but with a little bit of a twist here.
No way!
Yes, Richie's made it to the shed. He's made it to the shed. He couldn't make his train last night to North London, so he's stuck in my place for a few more hours in the shed anyway. Richie, let's go ahead for it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about that City game, and let's just put it out there. Julio Enciso only scores bangers, doesn't he?
Oh, my God. I was talking about this with a few other people in the press room, and we were debating whether this one was better than the Chelsea banger.
And it was.
I think this might have been better. I looked back at the different replays, and it's one of those shots that remind me of, like in tennis, where for 90% of the trajectory of the ball, it looks like it's going wide, and then it just goes in. He's like, oh. That was just so good. But yeah, I mean, unbelievable goal. That I can't remember a game between two sides that was pure quality, like throughout. It was just and Brighton didn't give an inch. They were going at it hammer and tong. They more than held their own. I think they were the first or second team this season who've had like 20 shots against City, which is just fantastic. Obviously a rare time where Brighton didn't have the majority of the ball, but they weren't cowed by City. You know, so many teams sit back and just try to contain them, and Brighton were like, no, we're going to take you head on. And the first half in particular was lung busting stuff. The quality was off the charts. It was an absolute joy to be there. And then to cap it all off, just to make it, we knew it was going to happen, but to make it mathematically certain that Brighton have got Europa League. And then a nice little touch playing the Europa League tune afterwards. It was a fantastic night and what a goal.
I loved it as well when they just put on the Europa League anthem. I was like, oh, here we go. Even though Europa Conference is also the same anthem, but just knowing
is
that,
it?
Yeah, it is. Oh. But the fact that it had like the Europa League logo on the screens and everything like that. And it's just like, oh, you had that feeling about it. It's just like, yeah, this is confirmed now.
And the nice little touch by Falmer Station with the
thing. Next stop Europe, loving it. So so I hope many of you like me will be looking at finding out ways on how on earth we can afford this and do it on the cheapest way possible. I just cannot wait for next season. But the season isn't over just yet. Obviously, we could talk more about the City match. We got Villa to also throw
Let's
forward
keep
as well.
About the City match.
But that City match was just insane. That yes. Look, as soon as I saw that lineup, I thought, oh, God, here we go. We're like, Villa need a 16-goal swing here. And I thought, oh, City are going to do them a favour, aren't they? And then they're going to go and try and batter us at Villa Park and they'll have the whole crowd with them. I just thought, oh, this isn't going to go well for us at all. But we matched up with them. Yeah, you could argue that most of those players were at the beach anyway. They got their Premier League title and they just need to just keep themselves a little bit warm for the FA Cup and the Champions League later on in next month. But we still put the best team in Europe a run for their money. We gave them a run for their money. And it's frightening just how good some of our youngsters were, not just in Enciso, but Ferguson was good as well. Matoma was loving the competition he had with Kyle Walker as well. And you really don't appreciate just how quick and rapid Walker is, do you?
He's brilliant. One-to-one, he was just snapping at his heels the whole time. But just on the point of the youngsters, for me, Facundo Buonanotte is best game by a mile.
Absolutely.
It reminded me a little bit of when Nciso came back from the international break in late March, and he came back a different player.
Yeah.
When he scored his first goal at Bournemouth, his decision-making was much, much better. He seemed to have beat players for fun. But for Buonanotte, he looked like he toughened up as well, and his decision-making was good. He was able to go past players, and we talked about in the previous podcast how he looked a bit wasted on the right. But this was the first time where he looked really... he looked really at home, and that was really good to see. I asked De Zerbi about that after the game, and he said, "It just, you know, this is something that takes time." As we said, Tom, you know, he's an 18-year-old. He's come from Argentina. It's a big, big culture shock, and it just, you know, it just practice makes perfect. But yeah, it was really, really good to see. And then obviously, Isiso's won the goal. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, Tom, was we previously spoke about at the Newcastle game, how Van Heek maybe didn't quite look up to the task for a Premier League defender for Brighton, let's say. What did you make of his performance against Erling Haaland, no less?
Solid. I thought him and Colwell were very, very good in terms of how they're working together off the ball, organising that back line together, communicating with the midfield together, and then having to battle with Erling Haaland, who, let's face it, was an absolute handful in that box, and he was getting himself in positions that were really threatening. So I was really impressed with Van Heek, really. I think credit where credit's due. He didn't have the best of games against Newcastle, and I think a lot of the players kind of went in trying their best, but when you've got 50,000 Geordies knowing that Champions League football is just around the corner, and you've got some like Big Dan Burn, who... Yeah, he's ex-Albion, and he definitely enjoyed that goal more than anything else. And fair play to him. I've got nothing against him for that. He was always going to be a tough shift. And I think that was probably De Zerbi, knowing him and his man management, he probably just went, that's the standard. That's where you need to be. You can't experience that again. You need to push yourself that little bit more. And he did that with City. Of all the teams to actually make that performance, City is the team that you need to really make yourself known. Van Heek's definitely done that. And it'll be very interesting to see where he is in the squad next season, because I can see him being a very, very competent defender in the Premier League. Whether or not we might see some strength in the transfer market in that area remains to be seen. But personally, I think Van Heek has definitely made a case for him to stay at least for another season.
Yeah, I think my take on it is that Van Heek is a more of an old-fashioned, hard defender. He's not the best on the ball. I think they showed at Newcastle, if you press him hard enough, he hasn't quite got the technical ability of a Duncan Colwell or a Webster. But he does provide something a little bit different. And when he was given a job to just essentially man-mark Haaland, which is obviously a crazy tough task, he is a good, you know, get rid of it defender type thing. Although he did actually show a beautiful bit of skill in the box with really quick feet when he, not megged, but he sort of like a flick through his legs. For me, that was, initially I was thinking, oh, I don't know if he's going to be good enough. I still don't think he's good enough to be starting. But yeah, it's safe with Brighton in Europe. He could maybe get some games there. I just wonder if he'll want to play regularly somewhere else. But segueing on to his teammate, there was an interview in The Athletic this week with Levi Colwill, and one of the main takeaways was that he forgot that he was a Chelsea player. So obviously he's on a season-long loan from Chelsea to Brighton. It does, you know, the fans are repeatedly saying, Levi Colwill, you want you to say, similar with a lot of players actually, McAllister, McCoy-Sader. But it does seem maybe as if this could happen. I mean, just to caveat, obviously, he still has 2 years left on his contract. He probably would cost a hefty amount if Brighton did sign him. But, I mean, he is saying that he's basically says De Zerbi's like a world-class manager. He's loving the team. He's loving the celebrations. He's had a couple of things on social media that maybe hints. Could it happen, Tom?
I think it should.
I
think it should. It should happen. Should.
Do you think it could?
I think it could. Okay. I think it can. Yeah, it should. Shoulda, woulda, coulda, woulda. It makes sense. Like, look at where Chelsea is at the moment. They still don't know who their next manager is next season. So, he doesn't really know if he's got a future there because, well, they haven't got someone to make the decisions on the team yet. So, you've got that to think of. And then you've got De Zerbi coming in, who really believes in him, guided him. He's now officially a top six Premier League defender.
Was Chelsea, what, 12th?
Yeah. And, you know, look, I can see Chelsea bouncing back next season. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
But he's got the prospects of coming in on the permanent deal. He's playing week in, week out. He's rather than probably being part of like a rotation system, he can easily just walk into our team every single week if he could. Personally, I think that's something that he will be considering. You know, he's despite the shaky start at the season where it just seemed like he just wasn't going to get the minutes in, he's all of a sudden become one of the best players in our squad overnight. Well, not, I would say overnight, in the second half of the season anyway. It makes sense because he works so well with Dunkey. He did really well with Van Heck against City. He seems to be an absolute shoo-in. He knows exactly what De Zerbi wants and expects. De Zerbi loves him. I think it'll be silly for us not to try and sign him on the permanent basis, because Levi Cole will definitely be one of those players that we need when we're in Europa League. So yeah, Levi, stay, mate. You know, Sussex by the sea, and you know we've got great beaches, you know, decent bars, and you know the Albion as well, and also Europa League. Like, Chelsea aren't in Europe next season, mate. So do you want that? I don't think so. So yeah, he should definitely stay, and see what happens next season. Make more history with us.
Nice. Another defender that we can't not talk about. Lewis Dunk. Finally, given the England call-up that he has long deserved. Obviously, his sole cap was back in 2018, nearly 5 years ago. I think it was October or November 2018 against USA. Tom, what are your thoughts on Dunkey finally getting the call? Because I think it just felt like it was never going to happen.
About bloody time, Gareth Southgate. Thank you so much for actually waking up and seeing that the answer to your back three dilemma is in the hands of a Lewis Dunk. Premier League captain, consistent week in, week out. I think he's only ever had one error this season, and that's it. Apart from that, he has been utterly superb. 8 out of 10. More or less every single weekend, every single match. He sets the standard for us, and it's utterly criminal that he's constantly ignored by Gareth Southgate in the past. And it wasn't even this season that he's been good. He's been superb the season before, and the season before that, and the season before that, and the season before that. In fact, when he got his cap, he didn't change, he got better. So, yep. And certain players who still got called up were shocking. And even there's someone, Maguire, who can't even get into his own team, and he's the club captain for Manchester United. How does someone not see the issue at hand where he just thinks, you know, I need to explore other options here? And yes, you do. You've got Lewis Dunk, and you could have had him for 4 years. He could have been at the World Cup. God knows what could have been. But look, he deserves his England call up. Over the moon for him. Cannot wait to see what happens. I only wish what could have happened if Solly March wasn't injured. Because he would have been... I personally think he would have also walked into that England squad as well. And I think next season he will. Because he is superb under De Zerbi. And I think he's just going to come bigger and better than ever next season.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the previous round of call-ups... Southgate did acknowledge March's form, but he said that is an area where they're pretty well stocked. You're like, you know, Rashford, Saka, I think a few other options on the wing. He actually sort of sidestepped the dunk question. Last time round. But this time, I mean, people do say that Southgate has a big six bias, and Brighton had to gate crash the big six to actually get an England call up. But yeah, I mean, as you say, long overdue. Just in terms of the quality, I started covering Brighton in the 2021 season. A number of times that Graham Potter was saying that, you know, he deserved to get an England call up. I remember one game in particular. I think it was Brighton versus Leeds, 2-0 win, late end of season. He did that like amazing chest back to the keeper. But there's so many commanding games where you're thinking, this guy is clearly better than the likes of Eric Dier. Or, to be fair, Tyrone Mings seems to have actually had a good end to the season, or second half of the season. But prior to that, you know, he was not very good.
He wasn't. And he was deservedly dropped in the last call-up, I believe. But yeah, how Tyrone Mings in the past has been picked higher Eric up Dunk, than Lewis Dunk and Eric Dier as well is a question mark that I don't think we'll ever get the answer to. It's one of those things in football where you just think, what? But look, Dunkey's back in the England setup. He absolutely deserves it. And I hope he stays in there up until he retires, because he's such a good commanding presence in that back four, back three, whatever he's going to play. He could play in that three constantly. He could play in the four constantly. He could be the pivot and have two wide playing centre backs as well. There's so much that he can do as a defender, and it's just so underappreciated on an international level. But I'm just glad that he's going to get that chance now. He's, you know, we've got Malta going to be, you know, the minnows of that group, and then you've got North Macedonia, who are going to be a bit more of a challenge. I hope he starts both. I think he deserves that at the very least. So it'll be interesting to see what Southgate does in June. Who knows what happens next?
Yeah, I hope it's not going to be a case of before the World Cup, you know, Ivan Toney was called up, didn't play, I think, a minute in those friendly matches before the World Cup. So you're like, what is the point in, you know, calling him up? I really hope that Southgate does play him, because form-wise, for me, it probably has to be, if they go for a back four, for me, it's probably got to be Dunk and Stones.
Yeah.
They're fantastic. Stones for me is a really, really good player as well. But yes, finally, Brighton, they have to really do it the hard way, though. I mean, to qualify for top six, to get an England call-up, it's just like, fuck. Anywho, so one thing, shifting a little bit, after the match, I was lucky enough to speak to Dennis Undav, who is maybe my favourite Brighton player to interview, because he's so candid and honest and just very critical of himself, but really good fun. Some are a bit more, I don't know. Seems like they've been PR trained. You know, they sort of, they're not there to really, they sometimes shut stuff down a bit. Whereas he just kind of, you just give him a thing and he'll just, off he goes. So I asked him about what had been the difference around the last month or so when he scored, you know, four goals in five games. And I was going to read you some quotes. So he said, after the Manchester United FA Cup game, I had a conversation with the gaffer. It was a hard one, but it made it click in my head. Since that moment, I've got better and better and finally scored my goals. I knew that what De Zerbi wanted from me then, and I was building more confidence than I had in the beginning, and that's credit to him. You know, he's the gaffer. He will tell you the truth. He will turn to your face. I knew what he wanted from me, and it's got better and better. He wanted me to give more energy because it looked like I wasn't 100% into the game because of my body language. I was always like this, so it's difficult for me to change, but I've really tried, and I think my high-intensity runs are higher than they were in the beginning. Just skipping ahead a little bit, he says, I think I've improved when I see clips from the last games compared to the beginning of the season. It's a different Dennis. I have tried to get better and better every day. And just to finish off, he said, I'm happy again. I'm smiling. Before, I was not really smiling, but now I'm smiling again. If I smile and I'm happy, I think I play better than when I'm angry.
There we go. To be fair, that's a pretty fair assessment of what he's saying. There were times in the past where he just felt like his head wasn't in it, and you just based it on his body language. If that's just how he is, fair enough. But he knows that. We don't know that. And I think that's where there's always been that sense of frustration with Ndev. But then he comes up with absolute moments of brilliance. You know, that brace against Wolves, the lob against Arsenal. And, you know, he's having a decent return rate in terms of goal, in terms of games to goals ratio. So, you know, there are positive steps there. And I think now that he's got that, he's found his feet now. Solid pre-season. And we've got a decent striker on our hands. See what happens next. But, you know, fair play to him. Let's see what happens next with him. Can't wait to see this new Dennis Ndev come next season.
Yeah, he also said that he, I'm not sure if you had noticed on the TV or on the screens, but he loves the fact that the fans sing his name. Like he loves it. Dennis, obviously taking the Neil Mopé "Hey Baby" song. He loves it. He was smiling away on the touchline, laughing, like, you know, waving away. It's great to see. But yeah, just on that point, I think we all realize that, you know, Evan Ferguson is the superstar. He's the one who's going to be leading the line next season. Well, but probably second, Ndev maybe third, but he still can be an important squad player. And if I think I heard somewhere that in terms of sort of Brighton's research, the kind of, you know, very stat heavy approach, Ndev was one of the best finishers that they've come across.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, if he can come on and have an impact, then sure, you know, he offers something a little bit different. I think against Newcastle, he just really, his all-round game wasn't great, but he just had a clinical touch. So, yes, hopefully he can have a good pre-season with De Zerbi and kick on from there.
Happy days. Let's go for it. Looking forward to it all. But it is quite interesting what you're saying there about him potentially being the third pick. And I don't think that's even a bad thing now. Like I said in the past, we've got a lot of games now to think about. There's going to be rotation. De Zerbi wants to run in the cup again. So there are going to be times where Ferguson, I think he will be leading it. I think he'll be the preferred choice, but he will be 19 years old next season. You got to nurture that talent and nurture the development for him. That is the priority. That's why we've got Welbeck in our team. That's why we've got Ndev in our team, because they're proven strikers at this level. They've got plenty of experience behind them in the form of Danny Welbeck anyway. So that's what we need to focus on and just get that rotation going as smoothly as we possibly can. And Ciso and Buonanotte can play in that sort of number 10 fluid second striker role as well. There are plenty of options and plenty of different approaches that De Zerbi can do, and he has done. It'll be exciting to see what happens next and how he sees the squad next season. But yeah, I think now it's time to move on to the Villa match. Now, we'll talk very briefly on this because we do have a chat with Ashley Priest over at Birmingham Live about all things Villa, because they have everything to play for. We have absolutely nothing, which is glorious. I was so worried when we had to play at Villa because we're not going to get a result at Villa Park. I will be very, very impressed. That's not because I've got any doubts in the club, but we're at the beach now, literally at the beach, and Villa will be keen to secure a place in Europe after such an incredible turnaround under Unai Emery.
Yes, he's done a fantastic job. You know, when Steven Gerrard was sat, they were, you know, around the relegation places, and now they're seventh. So not quite good enough to get Europa League, the turnaround is unbelievable. And you just think, you know, if he had the whole season, crikey, like, what could they have done? Because they literally came out of nowhere,
yeah,
to the point when they were fifth, I think, for a little bit. And then they've had a couple of not so good results of late. But yeah, he's got them playing really, really well. Obviously, they did beat Brighton 2-1 at the Amex back in November. And yes, it should be a really, really tough game. I wouldn't even be surprised if, just because Brighton can keep on surprising in delivery, I wouldn't even be surprised if they get a result. But just before we go to Ashley, there was De Zerbi was asked about the Villa game, and he said Villa will be another very tough game. They deserve to achieve Europe over Tottenham. Well, I didn't actually say over Tottenham Brentford, because that is also, that's just,
yeah,
they have a lot riding that, because Aston Villa are seven, a point ahead of Spurs, 2 points ahead of Brentford. Brentford could overhaul them all. That would be quite funny. But yes, so he actually says Villa deserve to achieve Europe. Unai Emery has changed their season and they have big players with a clear style of play. We have to arrive ready. The holidays have not started yet. We have to respect ourselves, the club and the fans in every game and every training session we have to play seriously. We go to Birmingham to win and play in our way.
Well, once again, you got no criticism for what De Zerbi has to say, really, can Never. You? No, you can't. He just says all the right things at the right time, which is great. I think that really, that's all needs to be said.
A quick thing. Should we explain why we were at the Amex yesterday?
All could be revealed later on. Just make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel, guys, on Teams Like Brighton, and you'll get to see exactly
teaser,
where.
Nice yeah,
I'm not letting them know just yet. But look, right now we'll go and pass over to Ashley Priest, who will be talking about all things over at the Villa end and how significant of a match this will be for them and their season.
So we are delighted to be joined by Ashley Priest, Birmingham Live's best reporter going, covering the Villa. Ash, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm all well, mate. So you got the press conference later and then all eyes on Sunday. Huge game for Villa. For Brighton, I just hope you just don't turn up, really, and just have a walkover and the job's done. So Villa get in Europe. So looking forward to Sunday. Yeah, Brighton. And yeah, you're on the beach, ain't you? So everyone's on holidays for you, isn't it, surely?
Well, I mean, De Zerbi did say, basically, we're not on the holidays yet, so we shall see. But obviously, Aston Villa did beat Brighton back at the Amex before the World Cup in November. Before we get to the game this Sunday, how has Emery transformed a team that was just above the relegation zone to one that's now challenging for Europe?
Yeah, many reasons, really, Rich. It's basically he's galvanised everyone. He makes everyone feel a part of the project, basically. Even the squad players who aren't playing, everyone's dialed in. Liam Bailey was speaking this week, the Villa winger. He was saying, I can't believe the turnaround when Gerrard left and when Emery took charge and how it is now. Just elite level manager. De Zerbi's the same, I believe. And just there's levels to this management game, I think. And Emery's certainly one of the best in the world for me. Quick turnaround, like you've said, in 7 months to get Villa where they are now. It's been pretty incredible, but style of play, tactically, it's been incredible. It's similar to what Brighton do, build out from the back, but very patient, not rushing, not all gung-ho and a million miles an hour. Emery says 90 minutes is a long time in football. Take your time, work through the thirds. So it's very similar to what Brighton style of play and what De Zerbi's doing down there. So, real recognised real. De Zerbi speaks highly of Emery, and Emery loves Brighton, mate. He watches them all the time, and he gets asked about watching football and who do you rate. Brighton's always his number one team. He loves Brighton, Emery does. There'll be a big embrace on Sunday, I believe. But yeah, Emery's turned it around massively, and he's just a good manager, good style of play. The players are all focused. The players are delivering for him, and that wasn't the case under Gerrard. I think Gerrard burnt some bridges too soon. Just one of them things. And Emery's man management has been fantastic.
And let's talk about the absolute turnaround as well in the Premier League table too. When Gerrard left, you know, there were talks of another relegation battle. Now you're on the cusp of actually getting European football back at Villa Park. Did anyone really see Emery being able to actually get such a quick turnaround in place at Villa Park?
Not at all. I mean, we'd have snapped your hand off for a top 10 finish, to be honest. The fact we're in seventh now going into the final game is pretty extraordinary. Villa fans, myself included, probably a bit greedy now. We want that Conference League. We want Europe, whereas, like you said, you asked me this a few weeks ago. I said, just give me 10th. Good season, that is brilliant. But now we're seventh. It's so close. We just need to better the results of Brentford and Tottenham on Sunday and just get the job done. So, yeah, I mean, the fact we're talking about European football, it's quite silly, to be honest with you. I was at Craven Cottage back in October. Gerrard being booed off, 3-0, getting hammered by Fulham, 3-0. And, yeah, relegation was on the cards. It really was. The players were poor. John McGinn, Tyrone Mings, Watkins. There was all the fans were saying, get rid of them. They're not good enough. And now they're our star players. So, yeah, credit where credit's due. The players have been incredible. And I think Emery's just getting so much more out of them. You know what I mean? So, remarkable turn. For me, a bit harsh saying this, I think Emery should be manager of the year, given the turnaround. I know De Zerbi's done incredible. But Emery, where Villa were, staring down the barrel, and to have them where they are now, it's got to be the turnaround of the season. So yeah, Emery gets my pick, bit biased, but I won't begrudge De Zerbi getting manager of the year either. Two good managers, you know.
For sure. Just want to ask, obviously, you know, the turnaround has been incredible, but where do you think the key area of improvement in the pitch has been to be the springboard for this success?
Yeah, defence, Rich. I think it's, what is it now? 5 goals conceded from open play in 14 games, something like that. A lot of clean sheets in that time. Away from home, they're very, very, very good as well. Defensively, just the defence. Tyrone Mings, Ezri Konsa, the two centre-halves, working with Emi Martinez, building out from the back. I just think it gives Villa a strong structure to build off. And I'll go into every game now, not fancying the opportunity to score, you know. I mean, Liverpool won 7 on the spin last week at Anfield, going into that one. And Villa shut them down, to be honest. And to do that, a place like that was commendable. Defence, just defensively, you'll see Villa going to, not so much at home, but away from home, they're going to a back 6 at times, just soak up the pressure, and then just counter-attack that way and go through it. But, it's just so much more solid at the back now. And like you say, if you've got that system in place defensively, you always got a chance of winning games, which has been the case at Villa. So, yeah, the key for me, the catalyst for Villa's form and turnaround has been the defence. It's been incredible.
Ash, for you, who's been the standout player under Emery?
Yeah, I mean, you'd say Ollie Watkins initially, 12 goals in 16 games. He scored, he was on fire, but he hasn't scored in 6 now, I don't think. He missed his penalty last week. But I think it'd be a toss-up between John McGinn and Tyrone Mings. Like I said earlier, two players who were cast aside earlier in the season. They ain't good enough to take us to the next level. They've had the time. But they've come roaring back, you know. I tell you what, Tyrone Mings, deservedly in the England squad, he's been incredible. He gets a lot of stick from players, from fans who don't watch much of Villa, given he's, a lot of the time, his mistakes can creep in. But if you watch Mings week in, week out, he's one of the best defenders in the league, you know. And John McGinn, I mean, he's pretty incredible, really. I'm guilty of, I didn't think he was at the level Villa needed him to be honest with you, given £3 million signing from Hibernian, did well in the Championship. Okay, he's doing all right within the first couple of years. But I thought we need something else now. But tell you what, John McGinn, you'll see on Sunday, he's absolutely incredible. The way he's just steamrolling through teams. His goal at Chelsea was brilliant. He's playing a little bit higher now on the right-hand side. A bit more of his Scottish kind of role where he gets goals. He's so much more of a threat. But McGinn's everywhere. So yeah, out of Tyrone Mings and John McGinn for me. Ollie Watkins has towered off a little bit, but yeah, I'd probably say McGinn. He's incredible.
If there was an area that is a weakness or can be got at for Villa, where would you say that is on the pitch?
I'd say down the flanks, to be fair, because I don't think Alex Moreno will make Sunday. The Spaniard left-back, he picked up an injury last week, but he attacks quite a lot down the left and it does leave Villa quite vulnerable down that side. So yeah, down the wings, I'm pretty wary of Mitoma. Down playing the left hand side, really, Mitoma.
Yeah.
Villa's right back, Ashley Young, he came out the other week. Matty Cash, he's only just come back from injury as well. So I think down the sides, I think Mitoma would be a big threat at the weekend. Down the flanks, Villa are vulnerable down there because the way they attack down the left hand side initially, and down the right, Matty Cash has had much first team football of late, given injury. So I think Mitoma could be the big danger player for Villa.
Where do you see the key battles on the pitch between Villa and Brighton ahead of the weekend? The ones that will make or break it for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't. Will Lewis Dunk play the weekend? Will he come back?
Probably.
Yeah. I'd say Duncan Watkins might be pretty massive, really. Watkins has had the better of his centre-halves. For the majority of the turn of the year, he occupies two centre-halves really well, Watkins on his own. And then you've got, likewise, you know, the people, Wildbeck's in form, isn't it? Danny Wildbeck's in banging form. I've seen him at the bar in the week. Can Ming stop him a little bit? Evan Ferguson, will he start the weekend, you reckon?
I reckon so, because he came off the bench against City. So I reckon,
He'll
His physical presence, great with his feet as well. I'm quite wary of the threat he's from set pieces as well. Do you know what I mean? Villarreal been a bit vulnerable from set plays. So, yeah, Evan Ferguson will be a big threat. Likewise, Matoma and Matty Cash down that left-hand side. That will be a really good battle. And, yeah, Lewis Dunk, Ollie Watkins. Yeah. Ollie Watkins is looking to obviously end his goal drought, and he's on 14 goals for the season. That's his best tally. So he's looking to break his 14-goal record for a Villa season. So Lewis Dunk could be, try and keep him out.
Just looking a little bit further ahead, how important, I guess, for Villa is it to get this Conference League spot in terms of attracting players, and just in terms of the summer, is it likely to be some big money signings made to really push on?
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what Brighton do, to be honest, as well. Brighton are very clever in the market. I've got to commend them for that. But yeah, Villa will go big. Villa will be bold in the Conference League. It's more revenue, isn't it, as well? I think I've seen that TV alone is £20 million. And then you've got your gate receipts. And so it's going to be a money spinner. It's going to be huge. It will help with transfers, Villa stadium development. But yeah, in terms of the summer market, Villa will go big. It's Emery's first full season in charge. Villa want to be... You might laugh at this. Villa want to be challenging for the Champions League places. That's the owner's remit. That's Emery's remit. Long term, they want to be doing that top four. And yeah, I mean, the owners will give Emery exactly what he needs. I'm expecting a few early signings. Maybe Mattia Guendouzi from Marseille. Emery's worked for him before. Loads of links from Spain as well. Rich, Nico Williams, Atletico Bilbao, La Salso, Tottenham, and Villarreal. Yeah, I'm expecting quite a few Spanish-based players to come over. And really, yeah, Villa's squad is quite thin. We need to beef it out with a bit of quality. Villa will be fighting hard on four fronts next season, hopefully, with Europe as well. So, yeah, Villa will be big players in the summer market. The only problem you've got your Newcastle, Liverpool will come again. Chelsea probably will spend big again as well. Brighton will pick out the gems, won't they? Brighton will pick out the best signings as per. So, we'll be watching Brighton's transfer activity with Emery, I think.
Yeah, you've touched on it for next season. Obviously, Chelsea have been, hands down, the most underwhelming side going. Liverpool just haven't really hit the mark as much as they should have done this season.
Tottenham
are just Tottenham. Do you reckon there's going to be an absolute dogfight for European places next season? Or do you think it's going to be a case of a few of us battling for the last scraps almost? Or can you really see another change in the whole of the top six system again?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Brighton and Villa, hopefully, touch wood, manage their European fixture list. Do you know what I mean? It will be quite relentless. Thursday, Sundays, Saturdays, a lot of games. How will they manage that? We need to get the squads ready for that. But yeah, next season, Emery says there's a top eight now. There's no such thing as a top six. There's a top eight at least. And yeah, I'm intrigued to see what clubs you mentioned do. Tottenham, you know, mess right now. But yeah, I think it'll be a real dogfight. I really do. I think it could be the most competitive season ever, given what Brighton are doing. I mean, I'm impressed with Brentford as well. Brentford have been incredible this season. Villa will come again. Newcastle are strong now. Man U will want a challenge for the title, no doubt. What will Arsenal do? Man City will be Man City again. They'll be there to be chased down. Yeah, I think it will be really competitive. Best league in the world, as we all know. Yeah, clubs like Wolves and that. Do you know what I mean? What would they do? Palace have had a decent season. Anyone beats anyone, you know that. Yeah, so I couldn't try and predict next season's table at all. Do you know what I mean? So it's just see what Brighton and Villa do. Should Villa get Europe, how they manage that? That'd be interesting. We've seen the tail off West Ham have had this season, given their European involvement. And Brighton and Villa will be looking to avoid that.
And you mentioned predictions. I'm going to put you on the spot, Ash. What is your prediction for Sunday's game at Villa Park?
Sunday, I think Villa will be 3-0 up at half-time. They're going to go for it. I think Brighton, yeah. I'm just seeing it now. Yeah, I can see Villa was storming out the blocks. It's a big day at Villa Park on Sunday. It should be a carnival down there because European football, Villa haven't had it in 13 years. And given the turnaround, given the efforts, the players, the management, the fans are buzzing for it. So Villa will come flying out the blocks. I really believe that. Emery likes to win games in 45 minutes. He said that last week at Liverpool with Villa 1-0 up there. He said, we try to win the game in the first half and then try and just see it out. So I'm expecting a rapid start by Villa. 2-0, 3-0 half-time. I can see Brighton, nothing to play for. Waste of time, to be fair. I think De Zerbi might make some changes. Their work is done. But Villa have everything to play for. Knowing Tottenham are at Leeds. Brentford could beat Man City. Man City season's done real enough. And yeah, Villa need to win on Sunday. So, yeah, it's one game it's a one-game playoff kind of thing for Villa. Emery's good at these knockout kind of final kind of games. And yeah, I can't see anything but a Villa win.
Specifically, 3-1, 3-0?
Yeah, I think 3. I'll go 3-1. I think Brighton might nick one at the end, given Villa already over the line. But yeah, I'll go 3-1, home win. Brighton won't care. They're after Europe. Villa after Europe. De Zerbi and Emery hugging each other at the end. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I can see it being 3-1 Villa.
Yeah.
We're at the beach, guys. It doesn't matter. Yes. Job's done for us. That's all. It was the worst feeling I just felt a couple of weeks ago. It's going to go to the wire. It's going to be like the last place in Europe decided at Villa Park. And I thought,
Villa are going to win 17-0.
Yeah, or something silly like that. Match fixing scandal and it's finest there with that result. But yeah, I just had this feeling like, oh, it's going to be the last game of the season. The winner takes it all. And yeah. I knew. If that was going to happen, it would be the most Brighton and Albion thing for it to happen. And Villa get it, I really thought. But job done on our end. And yeah, I want to because I just don't want Tottenham. I'm still bitter of that away win and that VAR nonsense. Not that I'm petty.
That was bad. Yeah.
I think I agree. I think Villa will come out strong. I think 2-0 at halftime. And then I think Brighton maybe might get one back. Because I think that Brighton, they did rest quite a lot of first team players for City. Like McAllister didn't start, Dunk didn't start, Ferguson didn't start. So they will have some fresh players. But the fact that Brighton have played 8 games or so in the last month and they've got a fairly threadbare squad, I think Villa will be so up for it. It will be interesting just to see. If things don't go to plan for Villa and say Brighton take the lead,
early goal, what
that would do to the crowd. I hope that they kind of rule them on because, I would like to see Villa qualify ahead of Spurs because that'd just be funny. It should be a good one. But yeah, Ash, thanks so much for coming on. Do you want to just maybe say where people can find you work-wise on social media?
Yeah, I'm on at Priest Observer on Twitter. Follow me on there. I'll be at Villa Park Sunday. Brighton will bring a good crowd up, as they always do. Yeah, to those Brighton fans travelling up to Birmingham, see you there. Have a good day out. Have a good day. And season's finishing. Thanks to Rich and you guys. Been a great season. And hopefully we're off to Europe next year.
Yep, sounds good.
Happy days. Well, Ash, once again, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Thank you for listening and for watching as well. Be sure to like and subscribe on YouTube and to follow us on whatever podcasting platform that you listen to. Till then, guys, up the Albion and look forward to a European tour.